for your own good. Alice Miller, for your own good. Because she equates the how powerful the childhood is on people like even Hitler. She goes into the history of his childhood to explain why, not to excuse, even though she's German, not to excuse what was done, but to explain how something like this can be created as a child. We're coming up on lunch here. Let me see where we are. Where are we here? I avoid conflict or aggravate it. Rarely do I deal with it. Well, can we all identify with that one? I mean, you ever notice how uncomfortable you get in a restaurant when a couple at the next table or across the room is having a fight? You know? They get loud and, yeah, God damn it, I'm tired of hearing this crap from you. Yeah, well, fuck, you know. I'm like, you know, people I know are just hanging like, you know, it's their stuff, they'll deal with it. I don't have to get involved with it. I have to get involved with it if he tries to hurt her in any way physically. Otherwise, I don't have to get involved with it. And, you know, I'm in it, man. I'm like, whoa, what's going to happen? You know, for years, I could not stand public confrontations between people that I don't know, I'm not with, and you got nothing to do with my life, and I want to die. I'm embarrassed for me, I'm embarrassed for them, I will want them to stop because I'm scared. I'm just like, please. None of it's got nothing to do with me. None of it. Except I got a hook into it from the tentacles from my childhood. You see? Yet that's not the normal reaction. Okay, quick.
You were talking about the anger being really big. What about the shame? 2 days ago at work, I have a history when I made mistakes, I was severely abused. So when I make a mistake at work or a couple of them, my shame that comes up is huge. What do you suggest as far as shame reduction, especially when I have to function during the day?
Okay, two things. 2 weeks ago on the phone, Tommy and I, same guy who's going to unplug me after my horrible car automobile accident and you know, burnt pine in Arkansas, he's going to drive there to unplug me. Well, you know, that's how I think, right? We were talking on the phone and we were saying, both of us are 30-some years sober, and we were saying that the one constant, continuous element of our childhood that we still are dealing with today, in our sobriety, is shame. It is the most powerful and the constant. And the thing about it is fascinating, because that too was handed to us, this sense of shame. I'm not okay. There's a lot of things you can do about it. We were also amused that it's the least talked about subject in AA. It is the most powerful underlying cause of people not being able to stay in recovery, and yet the least talked about. Healing the Shame That Binds You is a very good book if you've never used it. There are shame workshops. There are therapists who are called advocates. They work a type of therapy called advocacy. And they are there not to analyze so much and not to go back so much as they are to help you see your life today and how you're living it in a different, much more positive light than you see it. So if you can find a therapy who's an advocate, they're great. You know, they just see everything different. Yeah, but give yourself credit for the fact that you went there in the first place. Oh. You know, you hear what I'm saying? So there's a lot to be done. Don't worry, after lunch we're going to deal with what you can do about this stuff. So this is not like, okay, see ya, go enjoy the game, you know. Now that you're depressed and ready to, you know, suck on the exhaust pipe of the car. I fear rejection and abandonment, yet I'm rejecting of others. Sure, I close down. I don't want to get hurt. I shut off, and then you've got to go away. I learned that from my dad. You don't speak to a woman, you have no sexual relations with her long enough, and she'll either kill herself or leave. Fortunate for me, the women I was involved with were all in AA, and her sponsors told her I wasn't worth killing themselves over, and so, you know. I haven't had to deal with them. I fear criticism and judgment, yet I criticize and judge others. Oh, I am so good at that. I am a master judger. I'm also Policeman Bob. Tina used to call me Officer Bob. I'm busy giving all the people out there tickets that deserve them when I'm driving. And I'm, you know, I'm there, man. Hey, look at him. I'm looking for the cop. Where's the cop for justice here, you know? I mean, if I was one, you son of a bitch, I'd have you now for that red light, you know? Unfortunately, at this point in my life, my karma is almost instant, so I've learned to just shut up. You know, I look at one guy and think, well, that's pretty stupid not to put the money in your meter, turn around and talk with Jim. We go to this little coffee shop we all go to, the sidewalk cafe, and turn right around and the ticket's on my car because I forgot to put the money in too. I mean, instant karma. Laughed at a guy for getting a ticket in the handicap parking at Jack in the Box, and 2 weeks later I got one for parking in handicap access. $333 ticket. I beat it, but, you know. Yeah, no, you're right. See, now here's my other thing. I see somebody parked in handicap, and then I wish I was handicapped and in a van so I could pull in. Now I'm willing to give up my ability to be mobile, right? To pull in behind them, park my fucking van behind their car, and block them in the handicapped spot and get out in my wheelchair and roll in the store. I am willing to live in a wheelchair to get even with this person I don't even know. You know? I just need to be right. Better. I beat the ticket. It was a bad rap. Okay. I manage my time poorly and do not set my priorities in a way that works well for me. I have good days of managing my time. I think a lot of ACAs manage their time very well. They're also compulsive and obsessive, which takes it to a new level of time management. That's mine when I'm task-oriented and I got to get to the market and back by 3. My managing time may be a little off the edge, but I'm managing time. My problem is setting priorities that work well for me. That's my problem. Because being needy of instant gratification, I will set my priorities in such a way that I'm going for my instant gratification instead of setting them in a way that will serve me well. And because I live in a constant fear of rejection and I reject others, it's very hard for me to trust allowing time for things to take and evolve on their own. I think I got to get in there now and make it happen when all I have to do is allow it to happen. So we're going to go to lunch. I was thinking about, I don't know why I'm just not into it today for some reason. I was thinking about breaking up. Often when I do these workshops, I'll get, have you all draw numbers and then you go to the partner with lunch with the partner with that number as opposed to who you came with, because it makes adult children completely nuts. Completely nuts. First, finding their partner is embarrassing, and hey, I'm two, and you don't want to shake too loud in case there is no other two, you know. And you got to go spend lunch with somebody you never met before, basically, is how it works. But today we'll just kind of go with the one that brought us. And we can go a little early. Now, after lunch, we're going to devote the time to the things that we can do to heal what we've talked about this morning. We're going to do one exercise to take you back to when you were a kid. And then from there on, it will be things that will help you, give you hopefully some tools that will make it easier to deal with this stuff and help you laugh at it. Okay? Thank you very much. Have a great lunch. See you after. Okay. Well, I'm here curled up on the floor. How the hell do you think it makes me feel, you know? Not great. Morphine was better. Any questions come up while you're at lunch? Anything you want to ask me before we move on down the road here? What, Jerry? Will your mic? I would have told you I was going to ask for questions when I first came back, but I didn't know it, so.
Who's got the question here?
I'm curious, when you were talking about this morning about not throwing the toaster out and trying to fix it, in a marriage relationship, you know, with two people that are in recovery, and, you know, obviously we're still growing and there's layers and there will always be. How do you know when, this is hard for me to put in words.
I know what you're trying to say, but I'd rather let you say it.
I guess it's, what I'm trying to say is, you know, we're both, a lot of the things that are troubling are within us, we're aware of. The control issue was a big one for me that just sent me through the ceiling this morning. And I realize that, I don't like it, I'd like to change it. But how do you, how do you get in there and say, let's take this thing apart, you know, instead of, you know, throwing the toaster away and ending it? There's
okay.
too much good stuff. We've endured. I think God has a big plan. I truly believe that. To, you know, pull the plug out. And, you know, I'm just, you know, with your relationship.
Experience.
Know, I mean, I'm just curious.
Okay. No. That's good. No. I got it. No, I know what you're saying. Okay, let's stick with the toaster analogy for this. If I'm going to fix my toaster, which is broken, and I know nothing about fixing toasters, but my next door neighbor, Sam, he fixes stuff all the time. I'm going to go over and get Sam to help me fix my toaster. I want to do the work, but I want him to show me how to do the work and tell me what I need to do. So in relationships, I absolutely believe we have to get a third party involved. And finances cannot be an issue. You have to ask yourself. See, I think a thing that a mistake that a lot of people make is not seeing the relationship as separate and apart from you. You're you, you're you. You're male, she's female. Now we already got a world of differences going here. Nobody wants to accept that. So now they think we're all supposed to wind up alike. We're not. You know? Most girls want jewelry for toys or whatever, you know? New food product. I don't know. You know, some want trucks. But we guys, you know, it's like, you know, we cruise by the car a lot. It's like, oh, you know, or with the tool man. What's his name? Whatever the hell his name is, you know. New tools. You know, whatever it is. This is fascinating to us, you know. And we don't want to talk about our problems. We'll take them to the grave with us, which will be early, just because we don't want to talk about them. So the necessity to get somebody in the middle to help the two of you see your individuality, determine whether or not both of you are willing to work. Well, that, you know, that's a roll of the dice, and you have to make that determination and do that. Are you saying that there are unhealthy therapists out there? Of course there are. What a career choice that is, you know? I mean, I want to sit in a room 8 hours a day and listen to people dump their shit, you know? I mean, I can't imagine why anyone would pick that. I mean, there's some very sincere ones who want to help people with those issues. But I think most therapists, and I understand saying most is reaching, are not real emotionally healthy when they make that career choice. It does not mean now, however, that they've had the necessary education and 10 years of practice that they aren't really healthy. The other thing to understand is, in the regard to therapy, my therapist can teach me a lot more and help me do a lot more than maybe they're even able to do for themselves. I used to just dismiss people because they were overweight or smoked or, you know, I'd go and say, how can this guy help me? You know, he can't control his eating. What the hell is he going to tell me about mental health? Then I learned finally, when I had enough guts to stay, a lot could tell me a lot about mental health. One of the best lecturers I ever knew on recovery was, I mean, you know, he couldn't deal with his eating problem, couldn't deal with it. But he was brilliant when it came to dealing with people in a treatment center who are trying to recover. Get somebody in the middle. Otherwise, my experience has been, my history gets in the way of progress. I can't get past my history. And a good family counselor will help you see where what today is today, and this is what you need to be dealing with, and where history is history, and perhaps this is what you need to be dealing with on your own. So they don't allow you to clutter the relationship process with your history. They let you heal it. A relationship is like an automobile. It's separate from the two of you. It's separate. It needs its own care. It's as if you, for me, it's been essential in relationships to ask my partner, what does our relationship need today? Maybe the relationship needs a movie. Maybe the relationship needs to take just a drive with no destination in mind. Maybe the relationship needs flowers and a cigar, or flowers and a new crescent wrench, or I don't know what, you know, whatever it is, a gifts. The relationship, not you two, but the relationship needs to be gifts that day. And it's been so beneficial for me to set the relationship separate from me and view it that it needs its own care and its own treatment and its own time. It needs its own time. And this is time being given only to it. Does that kind of answer your question? And it's always the willingness of both partners. That's a huge one.
Counseling and
you know, you have
layers, and you know, maybe you go back. Years from now, you're going back.
You go back. You may go back in 6 months. You may go back in a month. You know, we had it this last relationship I was in years ago. We just one of us would call the other and say, hey, it's time we went and saw Betty. And I might not feel it's time. I might think everything's okay. I wonder why the hell does she want, but I'll go. I'll go. You never know how, there's no rules here. Find out what you need. What you need. Go to relationship workshops. Get in touch with Barry and Joyce Vissel and their stuff that they do up in Northern California. They do nothing but relationship and love and, you know, their river rafting trips they do for couples. The whole focus is love and the love of God. And I mean, it's a very sweet, loving thing they do. You know, that's their thing. Look for things. Look for workshops. What, you know, the relationship needs a workshop. Go to it. It's tough. It's tough. I've been reading a lot lately on falling in love and real love. Wow. You know? Real love is the hard part. Real love is the hard part. And I'm not saying people should stay in an abusive or a dysfunctional relationship. I don't believe in that. But I also believe we don't know how to do the real love part. This is where it's made. This is where you become friends. You should be friends already. This is where you learn how to let go of some of the fantasies of Cinderella and, you know, Prince Valiant and all that shit. And get it that the sex drive is not going to be quite what it was the first night, you know. And that now you need to move into other areas and get, you know, real. That's why I call it real love. It's basically like the kids say, hey, get real, man. You know? Get real. I've been reading a ton of stuff. It's fascinating to me. Now, isn't that interesting? 37 years clean and sober, a renowned expert on this stuff. I'm reading on, you know, it's like, oh, wow, that's cool. Yeah, shit, I never thought of that. I mean, I'm going through a book I read three times, which is Scott Peck's The Road Less Traveled. And I'm like, I'm reading stuff and going, man, I don't remember that. You know, oh, maybe open marriage doesn't mean having a lot of extra sex partners. You know, I mean, we are who we are. We got to just find our way. I think I put too much pressure on myself to do it right when I don't have the information or the tools. That's a bad day. Shit, it may be a bad 6 months. So what? Been alone lately? Trust me. You know? I sit a lot of times at home. You know, I got a nice little apartment. I got two hamsters. That, thanks to my daughter, I get to care for her. You know, I'm a lot of life in my apartment. And, I, you know, I sit there sometimes and I'm just plain lonely. You know, I miss having somebody in my life. It's a very painful thing. No, I'm okay with it spiritually, and I know my mate somewhere, and I'll, you know, be delivered in my lap. I don't even have to look. I don't even have to look. I don't have any success looking anyway. I've read thousands of those personal, you know, sections in the paper, woman looking to meet men, 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 women, 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 men, whatever the hell it is, you know. I read the ads, and I think about answering, and I never answer them, you know. Night before last, I was up till 2 o'clock in the morning on the internet. Going through photographs and women. Like I used to do jiggers of, you know, Jim Beam. So there's part of me says, oh, come on, please, I'm lonely, you know. I went through 360 different women in an age appropriate to me, which is already hard, you know. And I found two that I would consider responding to. Of course, I'm looking at photos and I'm not in person, and I might feel differently if I was in a space of their energy, because energy is really important to me. Yeah. It's work. Relax. Take the gun off the back of your head. It's work. It takes time. We don't have the tools. We don't have the information. We need help. It's just bad times. And these are what, it's like the saying, you know, what doesn't kill us will make us stronger.
Bob, I tend to get into relationships where I get betrayed, where they cheat on me. And when I start to sense this, my codependency starts to come out and they feel like I'm smothering them. Then when I discover they're actually cheating on me, I go there with a long list of how and why'd you do this? All they have to do is get angry with me and I shut down into a panic. It's instant. What can I do to get over that, or besides go out with better, you know, healthier people? But I'm wondering, what is the fear mechanism that shuts me down?
You want to turn that mic off you got? I want to answer this. I like to answer from my personal experience. And I don't, to protect somebody, I really don't want to put the answer on tape. And then they confirm what I've known to be true since I was a little boy. And women do it with men based on their relationships with their fathers. Same thing. Looking for the attention, the affection, the approval in the men, and they pick men who can't give it to them. They can give it to them during that period of falling in love. That first dating, yeah, hey, you're great, you're beautiful, you've got great eyes, you know, and then it goes to, you know, haven't you put on a couple extra pounds lately, you know, or I don't want to go tonight, I'm sorry, you know. Oh yeah, that's a nice paper or artwork. I'm watching the game. They've picked them up front because it recreates what's comfortable. I mean, when ACA first started, we had a wave come over from AA that was in thousands, numbered in thousands. Anybody like a little diet soda? We'd put on these recovery conferences. Oh, you can leave it there. It's you don't want to get to it right now. It's more all white, mostly. Yeah. And we'd have 1,500 to 2,000 people at every conference. And it was all about codependency and ACA. That's all the conference was about, but under professional umbrellas, okay? Now you can hardly find anybody. They're coming back. But why did they go away? Why did they come back when this is part of who they are, you know? Because the work is just as hard as staying sober. They thought we had a magic pill. They thought they could come in here and their relationships would be good forever with no effort. They thought they'd start dating different people and wouldn't get hurt anymore, you know? So they come here and find out, no, you got to work steps, you got to write inventories, you got to go to therapy, you got to do anger work, you got to read books, you know? Fuck that. I'm going to go sit in AA meeting, have a cigarette and a cup of coffee. You know, I don't want to do this. There's a lot of work here. A lot of work. But let me tell you, based on my experience, it's a life worth having, man. Tommy and I and Jim, all of us 30 plus years sober, talk all the time. Tina calls it Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. You know, and we talk all the time about, yeah, we've been through lots of things, and there's been deaths of children and deaths of partners and wives and pain and financial bankruptcies and just a ton of stuff. And we wouldn't change a day today, this minute, Would my friend like to have his child back that died? Yes. Would I like to have Taylor back that died? Absolutely. You bet. In a heartbeat, I would. And, you know, it ain't going to happen, but I don't want to not have had the experience because of the pain of the experience. Is it going to hurt? Sure. Hurting is better than feeling nothing for me. I am at my greatest risk of trashing my life when I feel nothing than I am when I hurt. When I'm in that dead zone, look out. Because you ceased, my life has ceased to have any value to me, and you also have ceased to have any value to me. I'll trash my whole life in a dead zone. It's better to talk to me when I'm on the floor in the therapist's office with wiping the snot on my sleeve. And I'm open-minded, and I'm feeling, and you can deal with me. But when I'm kind of like, we're in trouble. I'm cut off from myself. Okay? Ready? Shall we try and fix some of this stuff? What I want you to do now, get a few pencils and papers ready. This is a test. No, it's not. We hate tests because we don't know what the questions are. It's how we deal with life, like a test. You know, I give myself a pass-fail on every situation instead of just a lot of credit for showing up. You know, hey, you went, Bob. Well, they threw me out. So what? You went. You know, thanks. What I want you to do is I want you to make a floor plan for the house you grew up in. If you grew up in a number of houses, make a floor plan of the house that you know first comes to mind. Now, two things I'd like to caution you about. This does not have to be by scale. We're not doing architectural work here. You can put in furniture if you want, but it's really not at all necessary. Just rooms. What was the layout of the house? Your room, the living room, the kitchen, the bathroom, bedrooms, that's all. You know, take a couple, 3 minutes and draw this floor plan. Well, they don't need to breathe at home, you know. They'll work it out. Okay, now you make a little list of things. What was Oh, it's going to spin anyway. Okay. What was your most favorite room in the house? Write it down. You know, we're going to make a little list here. What if there isn't a most favorite room? The least terrible. It can be. It can be the yard or something. Okay? Least favorite room in the house. And it's just your least favorite. You don't have to have, you know, it can be because Dad smoked in that room, right? You know, if you can't find it. Doesn't have to. You have to be hooked to immediately to an emotional thing. Okay. Where did you go to be alone? Okay? Everybody got that? This is an abbreviated version of the thing, but that's what we'll do today. Okay, now what I would really like for you to do is take the person next to you. You may have to move around a little bit. That's okay. I know adult children are uncomfortable with having to move from their chair and out of control. And all I want the two of you to do, this is the person next to you, just start from the front and work back. I want you to share with the drawing and then the three rooms and briefly why it's your least favorite, why it's your most favorite, and why you went there to be alone. If you're uncomfortable in sharing with your partner, then go just move a couple of people up and share with somebody else. Okay? And so we'll give you 5 minutes here or so. Just, you know, show the floor plan. Go down the list and tell them why. About 90 seconds or so. Okay, will that finish up everybody? Or is everybody finished? Anybody not finished? Okay. All right, we'll do another 90 seconds here. Okay. Anybody learn anything? Anybody learn anything new? A little uncomfortable?
Yeah, I don't have a favorite room.
You don't have a favorite room? Yeah, well, I was the same. I think sometimes, too, what's interesting about this, what for me always was, I had a least favorite room and didn't know why. And I didn't even know why the first time I did this exam. My least favorite room in a house has always been the bathroom. I mean, it's always been the bathroom. I used to, when I was with different women who took a lot of time to do their makeup to get ready to go out for an evening, I mean, I remember one girl was so bad, I finally bought her just this beautiful antique dressing table with mirrors and lights and drawers for the makeup and stuff, so she'd do her makeup out here at this table instead of in the bathroom. My best friend used to, like, take the newspaper and, you know, half the house in the bathroom with him when he was going to go to the bathroom, and he'd sit in there and he'd read and hang out and hum, and, you know, I'd be pacing through the house smoking cigarettes like crazy, when get out of the bathroom, but I never knew, and I'm like in and out, I mean, like bang, you know, I spend no time, even showers were like, you know, not able to relax and really enjoy a shower. I can't now, but I couldn't then. And finally, of course, some people are probably already ahead of me on this. What came out when we went back in a regression was there was a lot of very, very inappropriate sexual stuff on the part of my mother when I was in the tub being bathed as a little boy. And that's why the bathroom always came up my least favorite room, but I didn't know why. I didn't know why. I had to get to the why. And then when I understood the why, then I could go about changing my attitudes, and I could get it that when another person was in there, it didn't have anything to do with me. You know, if a woman wants to take an hour to do her makeup, I prefer natural without makeup anyway, but if it took them an hour to do their makeup, I was okay. I could go read a book, I could relax, I could put my feet up. It no longer tortured me to death. There's a lot to be done with this. There's another way Mark and I were talking about. I couldn't do take a guided fantasy walk, you know, a guided walk through with your eyes closed through the house, guided tour of your house when you were a child. And it'll bring up a lot of stuff. If you're going to do some inner child work or some child work, keep this floor plan with you. It'll save you at least 3 sessions with your therapist when you start. You know, because you're right there. All you got to do is look at it and you're right there. If you're like I am, you may find it often very hard to get there where they want you to get to feel what they would like you to feel. You know, it was, I think it was a year and a half, somewhere between a year and a half to 3 years before I ever screamed the first time in therapy. People who know me now would find that very hard to believe. But I grew up in a home where silence was it, man. Silence was golden. Noise was going to get you hurt, and it was going to get you hurt badly. And so even as an adult, I remember living in this beautiful apartment in L.A., and I was like, it's a really nice two-bedroom apartment, and I'd get up in the middle of the night. I'm like, I don't know, how long am I sober? I don't know, 17 years maybe? Less than that, 15 years. I'd get up, go tiptoe, walk so my feet made no sound, to the kitchen, open the door of the refrigerator about this far so the light wouldn't get too wide, pull out a can of Tab, close the refrigerator door, cut my hand over the tab, over the can, and open it with my fingertips instead of my thumb so it wouldn't make a big noise, and then I drink it. You see, I was a grown man, able to afford my own house, and I was still afraid of the monsters in the night, the parents. I was quiet in my own house. I had obscenely expensive stereo systems in those days, and there was never any music on unless I knew somebody was coming over. I didn't grow up with music in the house. I grew up with silence in the house. Okay? This stuff will really... Okay, let's start working on some of this stuff. We spent enough time with it. Any questions before we move on, or that came up off this? Yes?
Because of what came out during our session, I'm wondering if lack of privacy in the home or a real safe place was common throughout the room. If that is there was no place where you were really, really, really safe. Is that common with everybody?
So it would be a lot, not everybody. It would be a lot. There are safe places in the house. I had the closet. I don't know why the hell they never thought to look for me in the closet. But the closet was the one place I could hide from beatings. I have no idea why my mother never looked in the closet. Yeah. Oh, okay.
One of the things that I thought was interesting is you mentioned the bathroom being your least favorite room, and that was also mine. And I know one of the biggest reasons was when my mother would go into the bathroom, a lot of times if my dad was home, he would go in and start bothering her or whatever. And my father's also my major incest perpetrator, and there was no safety there at all for me. So when you brought the bathroom up, I could really relate in my own way.
Oh, yeah. And it can be the kitchen, it can be a bedroom, it can be the living room, it can be the den, it can be the family room. It just depends on what went on in your house. And if your family was perfect, Ozzie and Harriet, it's hard to find the rooms, and it takes you some time to think. But they're there.
Yeah, Bob, first of all, I know I'm on target because it's so tight right at the bottom of the stomach. That, and I appreciate your work. I've been around listening to you for a while, but I grew up right across the street here, and I was sharing with my partner here that hiding is the key to everything I'm doing today. I was the littlest in my family, and I was terrified to be alone, and I was sharing with him that I would stay out here at this street light, and I would wait for my parents to come home, and I'd run home and jump in bed like everything's fine. And I remember in recovery, I talked to my stepdad, and I said, "Dad, didn't you know that I was terrified?" He said, "Paul, you never showed it." And I'm wondering how familiar that is with people, that I never show my inside. And I always thought, "Well, Dad, don't you guys see? I'm terrified." And guess what? They never knew it.
Yeah. Guess why? I mean, do you know why? Because you learn at some point very early on that to show it is to get no help. And little ones learn quick. You know, this ain't safe. I can't get anything here. There's no love here. I'm going to go play Nintendo, or I'm going to go watch. You know, they get it quick, man. And it's little things. I mean, they're much stronger than we think they are, and they're much more delicate than we think they are. You know? In your own childhood, if you came from Ozzie and Harriet, talk with me for an hour, and I'll help you find all of the non-nurturing, unsafe conditions that existed. But it's tough when you were raised by Ozzie and Harriet. But usually it's a performance-oriented house. So there's a lot to be said for appearances and performance in those homes, which is already sick. You know what I'm saying? Yes? You can talk to me
something,
after.
Something personal about me that I just would like to ask. When you talk about getting in touch with your feelings, and I'm doing some of that now, Have you ever heard about people experiencing a lot of physical pain doing that?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm going through.
Oh, I've had people who have been crippled. I mean, in the sense that unable to function normally with their body, arms out, backs out, the panic so bad. I just went through a very tough time where my panic attacks were so severe they exactly mirrored strokes. And my left arm would hang at my side and my legs and feet would tingle and I could hardly walk. And I'd have this severe headache. And I'd just be like this. I mean, I couldn't even lift this arm. And it was just panic. It was just panic attacks. Yeah, this can set off real stuff. And I was working through some stuff. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. If you're starting intense therapy, get a chiropractor, you know, or a masseuse or a masseur, you know, whichever you want. The body, well, there's an old saying, which is very, very true. If you do not scream, your body will. If you do not scream, your body will. And that's really true. Why do you think so many of these cancer people are cured of cancer who just learn to laugh or get their anger out or? If you don't scream, your body will. Well, I can't scream at my house. I mean, my God, the kids and the thing and one thing. Go fill the bathtub, stick your head underwater in the bathtub and scream as loud as you want. No one in the house can hear you. Hmm? Oh, the car is great for screaming. Yeah. Yeah, as long as you keep the windows up.
Another very effective tool is to use music for getting rid of anger or getting rid of the tension, is to go to rhythmic music, such as there's a CD and tape called Thunder Drums, which is the American Indians and doing their drums. It's a very effective way of releasing anger in a very healthy way, or tension.
Interesting.
Please turn the tape over at this time and